the circles and spirals of his covenant. Wherever we turn to in the Word, we find the same processes repeated, things being separated and good and truth coming together. The questions that sometimes flow from this observation are, why do we have to keep being told this? Why do we have to keep hearing it? Why do we have to keep being reminded? One of the answers I hear is that it's because the stories are different in each place and therefore the correspondences are different. So we then get a slightly different version of the method and process with each story, which is true. But even when you read the same story or the same passage over and over, it can appear different on different days as well, depending on what our spiritual state is at the time. As always, when I went to the Word with these questions in my mind, it offered answers to my questions, which led to more questions. But one of them reminded me that the beauty and the wonder of the Lord can only be seen through many others, that the form that is one becomes more perfect as the things that enter into that form are individually distinct and yet united. From Divine Providence, number 4, section 4. The form makes a one the more perfectly as the things entering into the form are distinctly different and yet united. Illustrated also by the marriage of good and truth, in that the more distinctly these are two, the more perfectly they can make a one. And the same is true of love and wisdom. While what is not distinct is mixed up, giving rise to every imperfection of form. The more we see something, the more we are able to understand it, and the more we understand it, the more its complementary loves are able to be married to it. The more wisdom is able to marry to its love, the more the understanding is able to marry to the new will that is being formed from the Word. The concept of the Lord being seen through many others as the things entering into the form to unite also reminds me of the idea of the others that aren't the Lord. We know there is only one, and yet there are also many others. From Mark chapter 5, verse 8 to 9. For he said to it, "Come out, unclean spirit, out of the man." And he inquired of it, "What is your name?" And it is saying to him, "Legion is my name, for many are we." The self that believes it is God and that it is the source of life worships many gods in this sense. They are all variations of self, but there are many different forms of them, and some are more obvious and some are more deceptive than others. And it is the false church that is built with the help of these others that needs to be let go of and cast aside. Come out, unclean spirit, out of the man. This experience, though, feels like destruction to us, because there are affections and spiritual associations that have been integral in maintaining this false church. And so the Word instructs us on what this process looks like, so that when it occurs in our own life, we are able to recognize it and have some idea of what is involved. Having the knowledge about what the process is doesn't circumvent the fact that we still need to be moved through it, but it does allow for some trust in the support that will be offered from the Word as it carries us through the experience, especially so in those times where we feel like we need to be carried. An example of instruction of the process can be seen in Deuteronomy chapter 8. In fact, The whole book of Deuteronomy is one of instruction, because at the end of it, Moses dies, and the children of Israel are ready to enter the promised land of Canaan and do so in the start of the next book of Joshua. The scene before us is of Moses addressing the children of Israel and instructing the crowd as to what this process will involve. Moses represents the word, specifically in relation to the historical word. From Arcana Celestia 6752. But before one can show that Moses represents the law of God, one must say what the law of God is. In a broad sense, God's law means the whole word. In a narrow sense, it means the historical section of the word. In a restricted sense, it means what was written through Moses. And in a very restricted sense, it means the Ten Commandments written upon Mount Sinai on tablets of stone. Moses represents the law in the narrow sense, as well as in the restricted sense, and also in the very restricted sense. Moses demonstrates a state of the word for us that instructs. This is a state of the word that has been taught about what the process looks like, and it is the voice of this state of the word that we hear speaking to us and reminding us of what happens and why. It is instructing us about what temptation looks like, what the desolation and the devastation that follows from this looks like, why this occurs, and what the end goal is. From Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 1 to 2. All the instruction which I am enjoining on you today, you shall observe to obey, that you may live and multiply and enter and tenant the land about which Yahweh had sworn to your fathers. And remember all the way which Yahweh your Elohim caused you to go these 40 years in the wilderness, that he might make you humble, to probe you so as to know what is in your heart, whether or not you shall observe his instructions. Right from the outset, we are reminded that the purpose of the instruction of the process is that we enter heaven, the land that we have been promised for our home, that we are all created with this as the end goal, and that this is our predestination. From Divine Providence 330. All are predestination to heaven and none to hell. That means of salvation have been provided for everyone, and that heaven is such that all who live well, of whatever religion they may be, have a place there. However, there are externals that need to be removed in order to uncover the states that belong to the Lord and the states that don't. And the voice of the word instructs us regarding the process of seeing the states that aren't of the Lord uncovered and of the devastation that follows. It points out the cycle of ownership, of the merit and guilt that we fall into. Firstly, we turn to the word in a state of wilderness, with a hunger to be fed and a body to be clothed, and its truth provides us with nourishment and care. From Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 3 and 4. So he made you humble and let you hunger. Then he fed you with the manna, which neither you had known nor had your fathers known. Your garment has not worn out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. We enter into a state of need, which is experienced as an uninhabited land that we are travelling in, and therefore it doesn't provide what the body requires in order to live. This is a state of temptation, as represented by the wandering in the wilderness for the 40 years. From Arcana Celestia 8098. Thus by wilderness is signified the state of those with whom conjunction will be affected. And as conjunction is not affected except through temptations, these also are signified, but only when the number 40 is added, whether 40 years or 40 months or 40 days, for 40 signifies temptations and their duration, whatever this may be. And what is temptation? What does it look and feel like? From Akana Celestia 730, a man, when in temptation, is in vastation as to all things that are of his own and of the body, for the things that are of his own and of the body must die, and this through combats and temptations, before he is born again a new man or is made spiritual and heavenly. And from the New Jerusalem and its Heavenly Doctrines 197, from a section titled Whence and of What Quality Temptations Are. Temptations exist from the evil spirits who are with man, who inject scandals against the goods and truths which a man loves and believes. And likewise, they also excite the evils which he has done and the falsities which he has thought. There are two forces which act in temptations, a force from the interior from the Lord and a force from the exterior from the hell. Temptation is a combat between the internal or spiritual man and the external or the natural man, thus between the delights of the internal and external man, which are then opposite to each other. It takes place on account of the disagreement between those delights. Thus, it is concerning the dominion of one over the other. Temptations, therefore, occur as states where we feel like we don't have what we need to nourish us spiritually. They are states where it is hard to think and see clearly what the Lord is asking of us and what he is offering. Hence, they occur in a land that feels like a wilderness, in that it has very little or nothing at all to offer us. And why do they feel like this? Because the self that is focused in the hellish proprium appears as more active than the self that is focused in the Lord. From the New Jerusalem and its Heavenly Doctrines 197 again. Because man perceives clearly what he is doing in his external man, consequently the things which evil spirits inject and call forth, according to which he thinks of his state. But he does not perceive what is doing in his internal man, consequently the things which flow in by means of angels from the Lord, and therefore he cannot judge of his state therefrom. We need to be also reminded that temptations only occur when there is a waking up to the state of what this self is, of what the own is that is centered in the hells. Again, from the New Jerusalem and its Heavenly Doctrine 197. No one can be tempted unless he is in the acknowledgement and likewise in the affection of truth and good, because there is otherwise no combat, for there is nothing spiritual to act against what is natural, thus there is no contest for dominion. So the voice of the word that has knowledge about the process reminds us of what ownership looks like and wakes us up. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 11 to 14. Guard yourself, lest you should forget Yahweh your Elohim, by failing to observe his instructions and his judgments and his statutes that I am enjoining on you today. Lest when you eat and are satisfied and build good houses and dwell in them, and your herd and your flock multiply, and silver and gold increase for you, and all that is yours is abundant, then your heart becomes exalted, and you forget Yahweh your Elohim, who is bringing you forth from the country of Egypt, from the house of servants. And when we see this, when we see that we have owned the goodness and the truth that is the Lord's, then there is guilt, which is still another form of ownership, and thus informs us that the hellish proprium is still attempting to rule. We feel the accusations of the scandals that the evil spirits incite. We own the lament that we have forgotten and have been self-absorbed, whilst at the same time feeling the resistance to giving up the belief that some of it even just a little of it, was our own doing. We rationalize that without the effort we have made in receiving the truth and applying it in our life, then it wouldn't have happened anyway. And so it becomes a repeating spiral of merit and guilt as the internal man and external man combat against each other, each fighting to be the one in the rule. Or so it feels. We find ourselves back in the land of wilderness and struggle. We forget that we have been here before and that the Lord is always present and always offering exactly what is needed. And so the word reminds us. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 15 to 16. Who is causing you to go through the great and fear-inspiring wilderness with burning serpents and scorpions and thirsty ground in which there was no water? Who was bringing you forth for you water from the flinty rock? Who was feeding you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers had not known, that he might make you humble and that he might probe you to do you good in your latter days? And so the state of feeling in the wilderness again is present because we have forgotten to remember the Lord, and this brings us into states of vacillations and desolations. Vacana Celestia 6828. For a wilderness signifies what is but little inhabited and cultivated, and also what is not inhabited and cultivated at all. Thus, in the spiritual sense, a man vastated as to good and desolated as to truth, consequently, a man who is in temptation. For he who is in temptation is in vastation and in desolation, because the falsity and the evil in him come out and darken and almost take away the influx of truth and good from the Lord. And the truth which flows in does not appear to him to have sufficient life to disperse the falsities and evils. Moreover, evil spirits are then present who inject grief and despair of salvation. So the good is vastated and the truth is desolated. To vastate means to purify something or someone by the destruction of evil. The word itself comes from a Latin origin meaning to lay waste, and hence the word devastation means to thoroughly lay waste and completely destroy. The word desolate, on the other hand, comes from the Latin origin meaning abandoned, thoroughly, and alone. It is to make a place appear bleak and empty and uninhabited. So we have two words that are frequently paired together in the heavenly doctrines when temptations are being explained, but each with a slight distinction of what role it plays in the process. If we think about this in our own experience of spiritual processes, we can recognize that when the loves and beliefs of the church within us are being challenged, and we are being asked to let them be laid aside so that higher loves can be in focus, it can often feel like the sense of self is being destroyed. When that happens, when those affections are vastated and devastated, we're then left with a state that feels barren and empty, hence desolated. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 19 to 20. It will come to be that if you forget Yahweh your Elohim, and go after other Elohim, and serve them, and bow yourself down to them, I testify against you today that you shall perish, yea, perish. Like the nations which Yahweh is destroying before your face, so shall you perish, insomuch as you do not hearken to the voice of Yahweh your Elohim. When affections are removed through vastation, then the thoughts and the apparent truths that flow from them are also in question. So the loves and affections that are perceived goods are vastated, and the truths or falsities that flow from them are desolated, that is, isolated without their loves. And we then have the fall of the church as we know it, because the church is none other than the goods and truths in marriage that our life is founded on, that we identify with as a source of our motivations. From Akana Celestia 1666, section 3. Evil desires and falsities are what vastate a person, that is, deprive him of all the life belonging to the love of good and to the affection for truth. But if the love and its wisdom aren't in a state of distinctly different and yet united, referring back to Divine Providence number 4, then there is no experience of one and hence no church, because the Lord as the one is known through the church. This is the marriage covenant. From Conjugal Love 122, section 5. From the marriage of good and truth, which proceeds and flows in from the Lord, man receives truth, and to this the Lord cojoins good, and that thus the church is formed by the Lord with man. So we need the experience of seeing Legion. Legion is my name, for many are we. We need the experience of seeing the other gods. You forget, yea, forget Yahweh, your Elohim, and go after other Elohim and serve them and bow yourself down to them. We need the experiences of seeing them in order to remind ourselves again that the Lord is the one God. The cyclic processes of temptations and vastations and desolations are what enable these multiple false gods to be seen. From the New Jerusalem and its Heavenly Doctrines 197 again. Those who are being regenerated do not undergo temptations only once, but many times, because many evils and falsities are to be removed. Forgetting that the Lord is a source of all life is part of the process. Conjugal Love 307. After the initial stages of marriage, the state preceding betrothal returns at times, and in this state, remembrance vanishes and forgetfulness of the contracted covenant comes in. Yea, by reason of enticements to things unchaste coming from unchaste persons, it becomes wholly obliterated. And if it is then recalled to mind, there comes a disparagement of it. We need to be put in front of the covenant, that is the marriage of the church and the Lord, many times over. The only way this covenant can be strengthened and reinforced in us is for us to be allowed to see what is present that isn't part of that. So we move into separations and sometimes divorces and then coming together in marriage again. This is the ongoing cycle of creation, of the divine coming into being for us. And it is temptations that enable this. They are necessary and part of the process of regeneration. From Akana Celestia 2967. These evils and falsities must be vastated before the man can be regenerated, and in so far as there is a residue of heavenly and spiritual life after vastation, this can be enlightened with truth and enriched with good. It is the remains, which are goods and truths from the Lord stored up with man, that then receive life. These goods and truths are acquired from infancy even to the time of Reformation, with one person more, with another few. These are reserved in his internal man, nor can they be brought forward until his external man has been reduced to correspondence, which is affected chiefly by temptation and by many kinds of vastation. For until corporeal things, which are contrary to them, become quiescent, such as the things of lover's self and of the world, celestial and spiritual things, which are of the affection of good and truth, cannot flow in. The process is a cycle of wandering in the wilderness, being fed and clothed, then owning what is received and forgetting the Lord, then lamenting that we have done so, then feeling like we are back in the wilderness again, then coming into a waking acknowledgement and a recommitting to the covenant of marriage, and hence finally coming to the promised land until we fall asleep again, until we forget again. But Moses, as the voice of the word that instructs us of this process, also reminds us that this is the way we come into deeper knowing of the Lord, as we return each time with a stronger affirmation and confirmation of him as our life. This cyclic process that spirals more and more inward to the divine is the path that leads us always to the land that is beautiful and full of wonder and abundance. From Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 1 and verse 7 to 10. All the instruction which I am enjoining on you today, you shall observe to obey, that you may live and multiply and enter and tenant the land about which Yahweh had sworn to your fathers. For Yahweh your Elohim is bringing you into a land good and wide, a land of watercourses, with water from springs and from the abyss coming forth in valley and in mountain, a land of wheat and barley, and vine, and fig, and pomegranate, a land of olive oil and honey, a land in which you may eat bread, not in frugality. You shall not lack anything in it. A land whose stones have iron ore, and from its mountain ranges you may hew copper. When you have eaten and are satisfied, then bless Yahweh your Elohim for the good land that he has given to you. Amen.